SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
This Christmas, discover festive favourites at Harvey Norman. Gamers will love the latest gaming consoles. Tech fans, a sleek new smartphone. Active lifestyles, smart watches and fitness trackers. Music lovers, wireless headphones and portable speakers. Ice cream makers for dessert lovers. Air fryers for quick meals and outdoor grills for summer feasts. For fun and personal touches, instant photo printers, premium hair care and styling tools. From cutting-edge gadgets to lifestyle luxuries, find everything you need to celebrate at Harvey Norman.
You're listening to SBS News.
The Bondi Beach shooting has seen state, territory and federal politicians agree that Australia's already stringent gun laws need to be reviewed and strengthened. The National Firearms Agreement was introduced after the 1996 Port Arthur massacre to standardise rules about who could own a gun and why. But experts on firearms legislation say some holes in the rules have become apparent. In New South Wales, applications to have a firearms licence are handled by the Gun Registry, which came under intense scrutiny after a tragic murder-suicide in 2018 when an estranged father, John Edwards, fatally shot his teenage children. He had a history of domestic violence which hadn't been flagged to the Gun Registry. Not all the changes recommended after the Edwards inquest have been implemented. Deborah Grawk spoke to Maya Arguello, who's a law and criminology expert at the Swinburne University of Technology.
Yeah, I think you can probably break them up into changes around reporting and changes around training and expectations, specifically in terms of domestic violence and applications for firearms and licences. So lots of recommendations through the inquest, but primarily there was a lot of discussion around the fact that there needed to be, I guess, a bit more of a collaborative effort between the police, the licensing authorities, and understanding how domestic violence kind of plays into these issues, because obviously we're dealing with very horrific deaths. And so the recommendations really focused around the fact that there needed to be oversight, or there needed to be frameworks put into place that acknowledged where domestic violence occurred or where there was a likelihood of domestic violence to occur, that it set off ticks and balances and accountability mechanisms. So one of the key recommendations, I guess, from a legal point of view, was that there was a collaborative effort, or there needed to be a collaborative effort put forward with New South Wales Police and the Federal Circuit Court, which obviously deal with family violence issues, because if there were any issues arising through family violence and an applicant went and applied to renew their existing licence, that would actually be picked up and there would be a report sitting in the back end that would enable an adjudicator to get access to that report, review that report, and I guess use that information when they were coming up with their own determination. Because one of the things that the inquest found was that there may be an adjudicator who, for the purposes of the application, goes through, has a look at the response by the applicant, makes that determination based on what they have there, that there needed to be a little bit more guidance and a little bit more in-depth analysis of, you know, any issues that came out of that domestic violence space. So having that collaboration between Victoria Police, the family court, and having information available to essentially the people who would adjudicate on that application would be a good thing, because decisions would be made based on all the possible available material to that individual. And I guess, you know, from a policy point of view, that kind of plays out into, again, making sure that there's collaboration between agencies, making sure that there's checks and balances and accountability systems in place when an individual applies to either get a new license or to renew their license.
At the moment, is that kind of checks and balances system accountability in place?
Some of those recommendations were related to compliance mechanisms and reporting mechanisms. So the change that New South Wales brought in was digital permits, having a database where essentially now it's digital. There should be the availability for individuals to go in and check, obviously on applications. From a compliance point of view, I think questions probably will be asked, particularly where we know that police have already said the individual, you know, one of the individuals actually had a license. They also had registered firearms. One of the recommendations from the inquest was to actually change the way in which these firearms are classified. And so this plays out in terms of the registration. If you are wanting to register a firearm that falls under a particular category, you need to be able to prove special reasons or genuine reason for wanting to have those particular firearms or for wanting that license within that particular category. So I guess the question that will be asked was, what is the special reason or what is that requirement or an individual who has committed horrific acts at Bondi, where they legitimately appear to hold a valid registration, but also registered firearms. Because why we had these changes in terms of the firearm categories, and there is that requirement to show special or genuine reasons why you need to have a firearm that fits within those categories. So, a shotgun, for example, what are those reasons? How are those reasons defined? I think this is certainly going to be something that's going to be asked in, you know, the next couple of weeks, the next couple of months, because as it stands, and again, acknowledging it's a moving thing at the moment, if we do have an individual who's got a valid registration, valid license, and those implements are actually registered, what's happened? How has that fallen through all of these new accountability mechanisms and all of these compliance mechanisms that are in place?
I guess the other issue for New South Wales as well is that there are no caps on the number of firearms that you can have.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm aware that this is something that the federal government has kind of flagged that they would be potentially looking at changing. I think the complexity that we're probably going to be dealing with is that the states and territories are responsible for the licensing and are responsible for the regulations around that. So if we're looking at an overarching mechanism where the federal government is going to come in and say to the states and territories, we have to have an overarching registration or law or mechanism, what is that going to look like? Because even with a national system, it still is up to the states and territories to administer that themselves. So I think the complexity for the federal government will be, well, if there is consensus for an overarching approach in terms of regulating licenses and, the application of these implements, who is going to be responsible for that? What will that look like? Will the states and territories willingly give up their ability to regulate these particular things? I think it's very complex.
The other issue that's on the national radar is the question of a national register. This was something that the former Attorney General had flagged was going to be coming in, and I understand that there have been delays, repeated delays. I can only presume that this is going to feed into that process.
It is. So the National Register is envisioned to, I guess, to plug in the states and territories' information into like an overarching entity or maybe for better conceptualization, maybe a database where you can get real-time sharing of who has registered, who has particular guns and what have you. But the states and territories are still responsible within their own domestic jurisdiction for setting up their own registry, for monitoring their own registry, for providing licenses. So even though we have, you know, moving towards a national approach, it still actually means that the states and territories are responsible themselves for all of those licensing issues and all of those checks and balances. So essentially what this big national approach will be, it will be a database, essentially, or something where the states and territories plug in their information. That means that they can go and search, they can do real-time collaboration, but the gap is it still falls back onto those states and territories in the first instance to actually make sure that those registrations are correct, that the registration, that the maybe renewal system is adhering to the laws. So I think there is some complexity for the federal government. If they're saying they want to strengthen gun laws, it actually means each state and territory is going to have to be on board with what that looks like. And they're also going to have to make their own changes at that domestic level.
What's the advantage then of a national register, given the complexity and the need for the states and territories to do their part?
I think collaborative information sharing in real time. I think that's where the benefit, I think, primarily will lie. Because if you're able to go in and you might be able to see that in, you know, say one individual in one state applied, didn't get it, they've then moved to another state, maybe they've applied and they've had it, or there's been some kind of issue or something sitting in the back end that maybe another state is not aware of, they should be able to get that information. So it kind of ties back to the inquest. If we've got an overarching system where states or, you know, adjudicators can go in and get access, that's far better than trying to deal with all the unwieldy systems that each state and territory has. So I think the benefit would be that real-time collaborative effort. But that complexity and that gap still falls back on those states and territories, because the data is only as good as the data that is going into it. So if you've got a federal system that still relies on those states and territories to do what they need to do, there's that point of failure there as well.
This Christmas, discover festive favourites at Harvey Norman. Gamers will love the latest gaming consoles. Tech fans, a sleek new smartphone. Active lifestyles, smart watches and fitness trackers. Music lovers, wireless headphones and portable speakers. Ice cream makers for dessert lovers. Air fryers for quick meals and outdoor grills for summer feasts. For fun and personal touches, instant photo printers, premium hair care and styling tools. From cutting-edge gadgets to lifestyle luxuries, find everything you need to celebrate at Harvey Norman.